Okay, Shavua Tov and Chodesh Tov to everyone. Thank you all for joining. Like I said, I really was not expecting such a crowd, so it is really a pleasure to see all of you next week. I guess we'll know how much you enjoyed if it's just me and Jenny next week. But thank you all for joining. So this is a very interesting class that I'm giving because it's something that I'm doing twice. So, like I said in the email I just sent out and like I was advertising, I'm doing this once between Mincha Maariv on Shabbos afternoon and then doing it again after Shabbos for those of you who are not joining. So it is good to see so many people here, so it does make it worthwhile to have to give the class twice with so many people. So the goal of this class is, as I introduced earlier, is that over the past couple of years, I've given a Shabbos afternoon series. 2 years ago, I gave one on the Avos, and last year I gave one on the Imahos, and the goal this year was to have a class series on the Shvatim, on the 12 brothers of Yaakov. And the goal is to keep it short, I said earlier as well, that 15 minutes is going to be our max. I did go over 15 minutes before, but now I actually have a timer with my recorder, so if I go over, you feel free to, start playing a song or whatever it is. But it will just be 15 minutes, God willing. And just one more point of introduction, and that is, as we go through understanding and trying to figure out who the brothers are, the goal originally was to have 12 shiurim, as you'll see, as usually tends to be. There is more information and more sources out there than... we won't have enough time to basically do it all in 12 shiurim, so we'll try to do it more in maybe 15, 16 shiurim, and the goal is, depending on which of the tribes we're speaking about and which has more information, we'll probably just do it in two parts. So we'll be starting with Reuven tonight, and Reuven we will have two parts, and so let's just jump in. Oh, and one final note, I apologize, is that Nachama Price, Professor Nachama Price, who teaches at Stern, who most of you are, I think, aware of, if not, then feel free to message me after, and we could talk about who she is, and she's wonderful, and she's a colleague of mine, and she's an incredible Talmidei Chachama, and she just wrote a book called Tribal Blueprints, which is a tremendous resource for this class, and highly recommended if you are interested in understanding anything about the tribes at all. Tribal Blueprints is published by Magid, everyone should go buy it, but this year we'll be going through a lot of what she does talk about, so it is, and more. So strap yourselves in, and let's begin. So I wanted to speak about Reuven tonight, and in particular, the reason why I wanted to speak about Reuven is because he is obviously the first biological son of Yaakov, but what's so interesting about him is that he is not the Bechor in the classical sense, meaning throughout Bereishis we have plenty of people who are technically the biological Bechor, but they don't get the rights of the Bechor. Maybe they'll get certain portions that are allotted to the Bechor, but we certainly don't treat them that way, and that happens basically in every single generation throughout all of the generations of Sefer Bereishis, basically, and Reuven is no exception. He is the biological Bechor, but he seems to get passed over by Yosef and by Yehuda. Many people seem to get a place above him, and the question ultimately will be why. And in so trying to understand this, we're going to have to understand what the lessons and teachings and traditions we can learn from Reuven and how to apply them from our lives. Right. So I said earlier as well that when it comes to the Avos and the Imahos, it's clear that there is a connection. We can all biologically trace ourselves back to the forefathers and the foremothers. We cannot all biologically trace ourselves back to each one of the 12 tribes because there are 12 of them, and the entirety of the Jewish people is made up of 12 tribes. For the most part nowadays, everyone comes from basically one of three tribes, Binyamin, Yehuda, or Levi, and so there are plenty of tribes that are lost, and ultimately though, since we do learn about them and they are such an important part of our history, and particularly because there are so many that are lost, it's incumbent upon us to understand the lessons and the applications that we can take from their lives into our own as well. Reuven is so interesting because of the fact that he is someone who, like I said, was sort of pushed over, and so the question is ultimately, what do we learn from him? Do we learn from him the fact that he seemed to have so many failures and was pushed to the side, or is there something perhaps more there? So the first source that is not in your source sheet, but is on my source sheet, is a pasuk, and next week I'll do a little bit better to make sure we have the same source sheets, but for whatever reason it ended up this way this week. So the first source is a pasuk that tells us how Reuven got his name. It's a pasuk that can be found in Perek Chaf Tes, Pasuk Lamed Beis, chapter 29, pasuk 32, and the pasuk is as follows: Vatahir Leah Vateled Bein, that Leah became pregnant and she gave birth to a son. What was the son's name? The first son of the future of the Jewish people, Vatikra Shemo Reuven. She named her son Reuven. How did he get such a name? Ki Amra Ki Ra'ah Hashem Ba'an Yi, because she said Hashem has seen my affliction. Ki Atayi Haveni Ishi, and now because of the affliction that my that Hashem has seen within me, God is, my husband is going to love me now. So it's an incredible perspective that we see, that how did Reuben get his name? Because now she believed that her husband will finally love her. And take a look at the first source on your source sheets from the Tribal Blueprints from Nechama Price's book. She writes as follows: Reuven's name is a combination of two Hebrew words, Reu and Bain, and literally means see a son. Leah is declaring to Yaakov, we have a child together. Our rocky relationship can now improve. However, it is God, not Yaakov, who sees and recognizes her affliction. Perhaps my husband will love me reveals her apparent longing for Yaakov's love, right? It's no secret that Yaakov loved her sister, Rachel Imenu, much more than her. Reuven's name gives us a window into understanding his parents' complicated relationship. The loneliness and sadness that his mother feels becomes an important part of Reuven's personality and his life's mission. As Leah's oldest son, Reuven feels a strong sense of responsibility to improve her situation. In fact, each of the stories in the Torah about Reuven reflects his unique place in the family, his desire to fix his mother's predicament, and his yearning for both of them to have the love and stature that he perceives as their right. So right off the bat, you see from Reuven's name that he has so much baggage that he is born into. He is the first of the next generation of the Jewish people, but he is the representation of the fact that Leah feels so insecure about her relationship with his father. And as you'll see, as Professor Price points out, most of his life is about trying to make up for this, trying to make that relationship stronger and better. And Reuven, more often than not, will constantly be trying to sacrifice to make sure that his mother can get one leg up. And usually that will end up leading to failure, because ultimately we know that Rachel Imenu was and always seemingly will be Yaakov's first choice of wife, but Reuven will constantly keep trying. And this notion of constantly keeping on to try to succeed, but ultimately always not necessarily succeeding, will unfortunately be the theme of his life. We'll see. We're not going to get to it tonight, but we'll see how he deals with the story of selling Yosef. When he tried to save Yosef, even that, he tried to save him, but he was just a one leg short of being able to properly save him. So it seems like most of Reuven's life, he's trying to do the right thing, trying to be that Bechor, trying to be that firstborn, but ultimately always just ends up falling just one step short. And the first story that we find in the Torah properly of Reuven and what he was a representation of this comes with the story of the Dudaim, when Reuven found the mandrakes, whatever the translation is, but the Dudaim, he found some sort of a flower, and this flower was seemingly meant to support his wife, to make her, these flowers were seemingly meant to support his mother, to make his mother more attractive and perhaps more fertile to his father, to Yaakov Avinu. And the Pasuk is, again, you don't have the Pesukim next week, we'll fix that, but the Pasuk, it goes as follows. It's in Perek Lamed, Pasuk Yud Dalid, chapter 30, Pasuk 14. Vayelich Reuven bimei ketzir chitim. It was in the time of the harvest, and Reuven went out into the field. Vayimatsa dudaim basadeh. He found dudaim in the field. Vayavo otam Eleah, and he brought them to his mother Leah imo. Vatomer Rachel Eleah, tni na li midudai banech. Immediately, we find the awkwardness of the relationship between Leah and Rachel Imenu. We spoke about this last year. It seems to not make any sense. How could it be that Rachel Imenu will make such a request, but Leah, as we'll see in the next pasuk in just a moment, that she immediately rejects it? What does she say back to her? So Rachel Imenu sees that her son got her these beautiful flowers that seemingly will help with some level of fertility, and Rachel says to Leah, please give them to me, you know, the least you could do. But Tomer La Hama'at Kachtech Esishi, and Leah says back to Rachel, shockingly, is it enough that you took my husband, for the Kachta Gamas Dudai Banai, and you're also going to take the Dudaim, the flowers that my son got for me? And again, so we spoke about it last year, how this is unbelievable, how Leah could say such a thing. Seems so ungrateful, because we know Rachel Imenu did save Leah from such embarrassment, but okay, we spoke about that last year. What we need to deal with right now is what ends up happening, what the significance of this scenario is. So Rachel Imenu ends up giving up one night with her husband, as long as she's able to take some of the dudaim, so that perhaps that can help with fertility. Now, the big question over here is, what is the significance of the dudaim, right? The pasuk doesn't say it. We have either we've grown up or we've heard enough interpretation to know that there is clearly some mystical value in what the dudaim are and what they represent, that there's some sort of help for fertility. But the truth is that is not so simple. They are not necessarily a mystical help. There's a huge machlokas among the Rishonim, the Ibn Ezra and the Malbim, and many others in particular will come out and say that, of course, that the dudaim were meant to help with fertility. Take a look at the Malbim. The Malbim says, Shehad dudaim. sugalim laholada, that it's known that the dudaim, these mandrakes, will help with giving birth, with having a child. Veratsa sheimo tolid od banim hafeich derech olam sheyirtzu sheyeh yached leimo. He wanted to make sure, Reuben wanted to make sure that his mother Leah would get these mandrakes because she had stopped having children, and clearly these children were the things that was that which gave Leah meaning and a hope that her husband Yaakov would love her more. So he, as the one who has always wanted to help his mother, tried to get the dudaim to help his mother out a little bit so that she can have some more children. But however, the Ramban and the Radak will say this is ridiculous. The notion that the mandrakes, that these dudaim, should have any sort of a fertility aid and any sort of mystical powers is a crazy idea. Take a look at what the Ramban says. V'hanachon ki ratzta behen lehishtasheil hitaneg berechan ki betfila nifkada rachil lo b'derech harafuos. Ultimately, these flowers, these dudaim, didn't actually have any medicinal advantages. Rather, v'ruvin hivi anfe hadudam o hapri hu kedimus. They smelled very good. Perhaps what I suggested earlier was maybe the Ramban is saying that they were almost like an aphrodisiac. It was like a perfume that they wanted to help either Leah or Rachel to smell a little bit better, to attract Yaakov a little bit more. Now, with this in mind, understanding that at the end of the day, some say that there were mystical advantages to it, and some say that there weren't. So if you want to say that there were mystical aids, that this some sort of somehow magically helped fertility, then you understand exactly where Reuben was coming from. He was trying to help his mother, and that sort of fits into the classical context of how we view Reuben as constantly trying to help his mother. But if there is no fertility help whatsoever, then not only does it make the argument between Rachel and Leah so complicated, why are they arguing so much over these flowers if they're just regular flowers that smell nice, but it also questions why would Reuben have done such a thing? Why would he have brought these to his mother in the first place? And perhaps this could even show maybe even an additional layer of desperation that Reuben had to help his mother feel better, because if they are ultimately just about attracting a little bit more, smelling a little bit better, then that shows, wow, literally this kid feels so bad for his mother, he's willing to do anything to help her attract her husband more, even just to go out to the store, buy a perfume for a few bucks, whatever it is, just to help. And that in and of itself shows the sort of like the desperateness that Leah might have had in her relationship with Yaakov, at least according to some of the perspectives, and how much Reuven, and again, to understand that Reuven was only 6 or 7 years old at this time, but how much Reuven was willing at a young age to help his mother in this awkward predicament between his two parents. The next scenario that we'll deal with, and I think this will probably be the last one for the night, is what we'll call the Bila incident. The reason why we're going to call it the Bila incident is because I don't want to actually translate the words. For those of you who are familiar, great, but I'll give you the pasuk. If you're not familiar, and you can look it up, but I will also read the pasuk in Hebrew and roughly translate it in English. The pasuk can be found in Perek Lamed Hey, pasuk Chaf Beis, chapter 35, pasuk 22. Vayhi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz, hahi vayilech Reuven vayishkov es Bila. Reuven went along one day, and he decided to lay with Bila, whatever that means. I think that's how our school translates it. He'll lay with her. Most of us are adults here, so hopefully all of us are adults here, and we know exactly what that means. So he was Vayishkov with Bila. Pileg Ashaviv, who was the concubine of his father. Interesting language that she's called the concubine at this point. Vayishma Yisrael Ayu B'nei Yaakov Shnei Masar. So it's a very weird juxtaposition how the Pasuk quotes this. First he says that, first the Pasuk says that he did this act which seems to be very inappropriate, to be with his father's wife, and then it says that there also, you should know, there were 12 sons of Yaakov. Now there were 12 in number, as if you didn't know that already, but now you know that. So the whole question is, what does Reuben actually do here? And at first glance it would seem like there's not actually much of a question at all, and the reason why I say that is because the Gemara seems unequivocal in terms of determining what Reuben did here. Take a look at the Gemara in Shabbos that I have quoted for you in the source sheet. Says the Gemara in Shabbos on Nun Hey on Beis 55b, Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yonasan, anyone who says that Reuben was a sinner, that Reuben made a mistake here, is completely wrong. Because the pasuk ends with the words that Yaakov had 12 sons. Now, why does the Torah need to say he has 12 sons over here? What are you giving me a math lesson? You're counting up the number 12. What's this teaching us? This shows us they were all like equivalent to one another. They were all like equally as great. They were all on the same page. In other words, what I believe the Gemara is trying to convey over here is that we know that perhaps from the younger lives of the brothers, they might have done things that are questionable that we have to take into consideration and question, but ultimately, we know that they were pretty good kids, right? They might have, you know, played around with each other. Maybe they tried to sell their brother once, but otherwise they were pretty well-adjusted children. They were pretty well-adjusted young men. And the notion that one of them would go and do something so heinous like being by Yishkov with his father's wife seems so heinous and so unbelievable. And therefore, says the Gemara, that the fact that the Torah tried to equate them all at the end means that they're telling us that even though it sounds like Reuben did something wrong, really it wasn't as wrong as it sounded. What does it mean? What did he actually do? What does it mean that he laid with her? It means that he moved the bed of his father. So since he moved the bed of his father, the pasuk equates it with the reality that that is as if he was with her, as if he spent the night with her. And now, what's interesting is that this is the Gemara. See, it's hard to argue with the Gemara, and in fact, Rashi and the Chizkuni and probably most of the other Mefarshim are in agreement with the Gemara. However, there is one of the Mefarshim that seems to be Cholik, that seems to argue with the Gemara, and that is the Radak in the very next source. Says the Radak, Vayelech Reuben, what does it mean that Reuben went? Where did he go? Halach le'ohel Bila, he went to Bila's tent, Vayishkavima, and Vashachavima, and he laid with her, exactly quoting the Pasuk. So it would seem that the Radak is arguing on the Gemara. How does the Radak do that? I have no idea, but that is what he does. Again, most of the Mefarshim don't argue with the Gemara because it's weird when the Gemara is so unequivocal about something. Then most of the Mefarshim take the stance of who are we to argue with the Gemara. The Radak does do that here. Again, I'm not so sure why or how he has the right, but that is what he does. It's just important to note. Now, understanding this situation makes a lot of sense in the context of how we've framed Reuven thus far. Again, what had just happened recently? So Rachel Imenu had passed away, and so now the choice was to be either with Leah or to be with Bila. And so the interesting thing is that Yaakov decided to be with Bila because that was a reminder for him of Rachel Imenu. Now Reuven took that as a huge slight to his mother, but Reuven, being the ultimate defender of his mother and, you know, her pride and ultimately the love that she was so desperate for from his father, he decided that he was going to go do such a thing and move the bed. Again, from that context, the notion that what the Gemara is saying sounds a lot more true. To be with Bila would not make any sense logically if he wanted to have relations with her, but to move the bed just to protect his mother, that makes a lot more sense. So that's why the Gemara's perspective in this context and that framing makes a significant amount more sense than the alternative. And what this ultimately shows us is, again, how Reuven keeps trying to do the right thing. He's trying to help his mother so desperately, but he just keeps falling short a little bit. He's trying so hard. This is a little boy, now a young man and a young adult, and he keeps trying to be there for his mother, trying to support her, trying to do what you would expect the firstborn to do, and that is to ultimately always do whatever he can to help the family and help his parents, help his mother in this situation. But ultimately, you see that he keeps falling short. He keeps making a mistake that on the front of it all seems irreparable, and we'll have to see how this affects the rest of his life. So now my time is way up, so I'm going to stop right there, but just a quick preview for next week. The goal of next week will be to finish going through a few more of the incidents and the stories of Reuven's life, and understand ultimately what we're trying to gain out of the life of Reuven. Again, the fact that I had this conversation with someone after in Shul about, you know, they're trying to say that maybe Reuven, maybe the tribes, maybe they are not as great as some people try to say they are. At the end of the day, we believe, I think that this is true unequivocally, that our central core belief is that we cannot understand the level that the Avos were on and that the Shvatim were on. Now, certainly things they did, and again, some of the events that we read about seem to call into question their character and call into question how they can act in such a way, but ultimately we believe they are great, and their greatness is something that we all need to learn from. So the goal next week, we'll try and understand and encapsulate for us the lessons that we can take from Reuven's life. Again, the odds are that none of us probably biologically do come from the tribe of Reuven, but ultimately to learn what we can garner from his life and his teachings and the lessons that he gave over to us. Everyone should have a Shavuot Tov, a great night, and a Chodesh Tov as well.